Spirituality, what I found on the Appalachian Trail.
Hi, this is Laughs-A-Lot. That's my trail name from the Appalachian Trail. I thru-hiked it in 2014. A quick way of summary, what is the Appalachian Trail? It's a footpath that extends through 14 states from Georgia to Maine. And it starts at Springer Mountain. I happen to start at that end, and I walk north up to the state of Maine, which is where I live. And it ends at Mount Katahdin, Maine, which is absolutely stunning. I'll have a couple of pictures in here of my summit from that. While it is a footpath and it's a long hike, that to me, the way I really think about it is more as a pilgrimage. It's a journey. And it is through this journey that you get immersed in nature. You get immersed with fellow travelers, people who you just meet along the trail who want to help you, your fellow hikers. There's solitude, natural beauty, simplicity, and you do this for months, and it's hard work, and the end result is pretty profound, and that's what I'd like to share, at least from my experience, what I took out of it. During this journey, I traveled across 14 states and hiked nearly 2,200 miles. I get asked a lot of times, how did you benefit from this? What did you learn? How did it change your life? And the answer isn't something that I can really say in 1 minute. And this video is really an attempt to kind of share how I feel as I've reflected on this experience, it's impacted me and what I've learned. And in a nutshell, what you'll hear through stories and sort of chapters of this is it has introduced another dimension to my life that before had been absent or very small, and that is really spirituality. And in particular, more openness to personal improvement and also healing. And my hope is with this is that it's entertaining and interesting, but really ultimately that it inspires somebody, and hopefully more than one person, to do their own kind of journey or pilgrimage, some immersion outside of their daily life, and I have them experience an opportunity to grow. Why did I hike the Appalachian Trail, and why do most people hike it? And I talk to a lot of people, and I think their answers at the beginning of the trail, you hear a lot of things like it's for fun, it's a challenge, that I'll be in the best shape of my life, I'm going to lose some weight, that it's an adventure. And all those things are great, and they're all true. When you talk to people at the end of the trail, those who are fortunate enough to make their journey all the way, you hear those things and then something deeper very often. And for me, it was this spirituality that I discovered in myself, or that the trail introduced me to, is kind of how I like to think about it. So who hikes the Appalachian Trail? What I observed is it tends to be people in transition. And I think that this is particularly appropriate because the trail is not just a footpath, and it really provides a pilgrimage, or it's a journey. And if you you think about many cultures, have this notion of pilgrimage, be they religious, where people travel to a holy site, and their journey to that site is part of that pilgrimage, and it it has that motivation. You see it in Aboriginal cultures, where coming of age, you go out in the bush and you have a pilgrimage or a journey to have some awakening and growth to come back as an adult. That you see it in some Native American cultures. And then I think just it's been universal throughout history and culture, and different religions and non-religious. So the Appalachian Trail, I think my personal belief is it was even designed as a pilgrimage, and it certainly delivered that to me. I will tell you that the Appalachian Trail through hike for me was the absolute best thing I've ever done in my life, with the exception of getting married and having two boys. There's a lot of other highlights in life, and that's to try to give you a feeling of it is an incredible opportunity. If you have a chance to do it, or something of that ilk, some sort of pilgrimage, I would strongly encourage you to do it.
Chapter 1, Grateful Living.
One of the things that I observed on the trail pretty quickly was how many people quit. And it was sort of shocking because, you know, I'd been wanting to do this trail for so long in my life, and most of the people that were hiking had the big dream of doing this through hike. And yet, right off the bat, people in the first days were leaving the trail, and it would just accelerate that something in the order of 80% of the people who attempt a through hike do not make it. And what I also observed was the reasons that people left were almost always mental or psychological, and very few times were they physical. And it showed me a pattern, and I started thinking about that. And after about 3 or 4 weeks, I made a purposeful decision to develop a new habit, and I call it grateful living. And what I would do is, when I'd get up in the morning in my sleeping bag, before I would get out of bed, I would think of 10 thoughts that I was grateful for that were in the present. Right now, these are 10 things I'm grateful for. This would happen even if it's pouring rain outside and you know as soon as you get out of the tent, you're soaked and you're probably going to be in it all day. That my focus would be on shifting my mind to a positive and grateful position. And it's amazing how many things quickly come into your mind that you're grateful for. They're not things that I'm hoping for in 10 years. They're things that are right here, right now, that where I am, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that my body is reacting this way. And it can be also things that I'm grateful to have such a loving and supporting wife who is supporting me on this journey. And so it's that mindset sets the tone for the day. As you encounter various challenges and highlights and lowlights, it just seemed to shift my perspective. And I would see way more heavily all of the opportunities and the good things that were happening rather than the challenges and focusing on, oh, this hurts, or I'm too hot, or it's too cold, and that sort of stuff. The other habit that I developed that goes along with that is at night when I would lie down to go to bed, and I continue this to the day as well, as I think of one thing that I'm the most grateful for that day, one experience, something that happened that I'm most grateful for. Somebody that I met that was a highlight, a view that you had, a conversation on the phone that meant a lot to you, something that somebody said, whatever it is, again, to set the tone so when I go to sleep, it is on a grateful mindset. And I can tell you, for me, this was pretty powerful because my natural instinct before wasn't as balanced as that. I think it tended to be a little bit more towards focusing on how I can improve things or what's wrong, I need to fix it, rather than appreciating all the things that I should be grateful for. And one of the things that it did for me on this trip was never once, I was on the trail for 4.5 months, never once did I think of quitting that trail. And I attribute it in part to this grateful living perspective. And anybody who has a similar mindset that I had prior to this is something you might try in your regular life. I do it every day now. Obviously, my things I'm grateful for aren't related to hiking right now, other than my day hiking, but that it's just as powerful on the trail as it is off the trail, and it's one of the many gifts that the trail continues to give me.
Chapter 2, Trail Magic.
I want to talk a little bit about trail magic. It's a tradition on the AT where people help you on your journey. And these people can be family and loved ones, but very often it's just total strangers that you have no idea who they are. Sometimes you never even meet them, and they do things to help you on your journey. And sometimes they leave food for you in the woods or beverages. On a hot day, there'll be a cooler out there full of soda on ice with some snacks at it. People who pick you up when you're hitchhiking. Sometimes people will take you home and have dinner and maybe spend the night. It's all kinds of ways to help you. And these tend to happen when you kind of know most need it. You're out of food and then somebody approaches you and says, hey, I've got some apples, would you like them? And stuff like that. And it means so much to you to be supported and to be the beneficiary of such kindness and love that the people who do the trail magic are called trail angels, which is kind of a cool thing, and it ties into the spirituality of the trail, I think. that the point, the legacy of this trail magic is it's very hard to spend months out there in the woods and have so many people come to you with such love and kindness to not have that touch your soul. And I think everybody who stays on that trail for a long time gets impacted by that. Most thru-hikers later become trail angels. And what I'd like to think is after they finish the trail that you try to work on becoming more of a life angel where you live that way everywhere, not just on the trail. A couple stories that kind of highlight the power of the trail magic. One is a friend that I met on the trail and hiked with off and on. She's from Detroit. From her accounts, it's a pretty tough town to live in, and she's become very distrustful of people that she doesn't know. She locks her doors, locks the car. If she doesn't know them, she sort of is cautious as she meets new people. And after about 4 months on the trail, we were talking one day and she said all this kindness that she had seen through trail magic and also the fellow hiker community, said it has restored her faith in humanity. And I thought, what a gift from the trail. What a gift. And it's a beautiful part of the trail. Another story, I had all kinds of people help me on the trail, but this one stood out in terms of impact on me. And I was about halfway done with the trail. I was in West Virginia, and I came on a road that led down to a convenience store. So I went down to get some snacks and pizza and some soda. And I was sitting outside the convenience store eating it on the curb, and people were pulling up and going inside and getting their stuff. And some people pull up, one more person pulls up in a fancy new car, and she gets out of it and she sees me, and I looked unkempt. I'd been in the woods for 2 weeks, and she makes some assumptions and she turns back to her car and hits her remote to lock the car and then goes inside. A couple minutes after that, a young woman pulls up in a probably 30-year-old junker. It's all rusted out on the bottom, and as she turns into the convenience store, it stalls and she coasts up to the parking spot. She runs out and acknowledges me and runs in the store. A couple minutes later, comes out and she's got a energy drink and a pack of cigarettes. And she walks up to me and starts a conversation, and she said, you know, where are you hiking? Are you hiking somewhere? And I told her, yeah. And where are you going? Where'd you start and where are you going? And so I told her I started in Georgia and I was going to Maine, and it's the Appalachian Trail, and I'm kind of walking home because I live in Maine. And she lived in that area, did not know about the Appalachian Trail, probably driven by the trail hundreds of times. But in that 2 or 3 minute conversation, she captured the essence of what that trail was about. And she said, I think it's so cool that you're having this many months to be in the woods and just reflect. And she said, is there any way that I can help you on your journey? And the fact that she used that word was really cool. And she sticks her hand out and she offers me the change that she had from the store, which was $2 bills and some coins, which I refused. I figured she needed it more than I did. But the impact that she understood the trail at its essence, and the heartfelt generosity, probably from somebody who could least afford it, that's the inspiration that I want to learn from the trail. And the touch of kindness that you receive over and over and over is a legacy that can't help but improve your soul.
Chapter 3, Hiker Community.
One of the highlights of the trail experience is undoubtedly all the cool people that you meet, the fellow hikers. That in a sense, as you travel along, you have this hiker community, but it's almost becomes your hiker family. That you'll pull into a shelter or a campground, camp spot, and you'll see a whole bunch of familiar faces. The faces that you don't recognize yet, you look at and there's already a bond. That you expect to be interested in them, you expect to like them, and there's a trust. One of the cool things about the trails, it's not a competition, it's not a race. You're all on your own journey, you're all doing your own thing, but you're doing it together, and you support people, you help people, and there's a culture in the trail that is so positive in the way that you respect other people's journey and actually encourage and help them. And it's a neat thing. You can be in town in a grocery store and you see a fellow hiker that you can tell from they probably haven't had a shower for a long time. And even if you don't know them, you walk up, give them a fist bump, hello, and it's like an instant bond. And there's support, and you know, it's like you're old buddies. And that was a big, cool part of the journey for me. And I think when I look at it from what did I learn and how did it help me grow, I think one of the big things is to emphasize so much to not prejudge folks, that you see some people who you probably wouldn't meet otherwise, and they have backgrounds that are so different, and yet you realize what a great opportunity it is to get to know them. So it really opens up, I think, your acceptance to and your willingness to step out of your comfort zone. And the other thing is just the more trust that there's so many super people, and I think to let your guard down and be open to the community that you're a part of.
Chapter 4, Energy Attunement.
It's been a couple years since I thru-hiked the AT, and I've done a lot of thinking about it, and in particular one area has to do with sort of this natural energy that's in the woods and in nature. And what really got me thinking about it is, as I was on my hike, that a young man that I was hiking with for a few days kind of shared his philosophy of how he approaches the trail, and it was working for him. And he sort of viewed it as him against the trail, that the trail would put all these obstacles and challenges for him, that there was a hard hike up a summit, and he would view it as a challenge, and it was trying to stop him. And then when he would make the summit, he would be like, I conquered that mountain. And it's him against the trail. And I thought a lot about that, and what I ended up sort of struggling with was that didn't feel comfortable for me. It was working for him, but I went back to how I've always viewed the woods as a sanctuary, almost a cathedral. And it's a place that if you're having a bad day or you're stressed, if I go out in the woods and just sit, I find it very calming and very peaceful. It's, for some reason, that sort of brings a blood pressure down. And then I started thinking about, why is that? And what I believe is that there's this sort of natural energy in all of the living things that are there, that the trees have energy, the ground cover, the soil is full of organisms with energy, and the water has organisms in it. All of that is in a natural balance. It's in equilibrium. At that moment, even though it's changing, like a tree falls and other things, a storm comes through and that sort of stuff, at that moment, it's in perfect balance. And if you look at going through the trail, I would hike and say, I want to connect with what's there right now. That energy balance, I want to be part of it. I don't want to fight it. So I kind of looked at it like I was flowing through the trail and trying to be part of that equilibrium, of that energy. And for me, that was very helpful. I view it as sort of trying to attune to what's already there, because it's already perfect for that moment. And what was neat about that is it's almost like having, when I do it effectively, it's like having a meditation the whole time that you're hiking. And it's something that has been very helpful for me in just in taking my pleasure of hiking to a different level.
Chapter 5, Hike Your Own Hike.
Hike Your Own Hike. That is a phrase that any long distance hiker has said and heard many times. On the AT, it hits you from right at the beginning, and you really hear that all the way through. What it's referring to is you really focus on how you're going to hike and what experience you want. I'm kind of a purist on the AT. I wanted to make sure I hiked every inch of that trail. Some people don't have that same view, and they'll say, I'm going to take a blue blaze or a shortcut around something, or they'll do things in a different order, or that sort of thing. It's every decision you make about your hiking, that, you know, what your diet is, what you want to sleep in the morning. You might not want to hike till noon. Some people want to hike all night. That it's just all kinds of choices. It's your journey. You have the freedom to decide, and you make your choices. And as long as they don't negatively impact somebody else's journey, they're fine, and you support them and embrace them and respect them. I love that about the hiking culture, and it kind of got me thinking about what can you learn there that you apply off the trail. And really, when I looked at it, I kind of realized that in certain choices that I see other people make or loved ones make that sometimes I've been too judgmental and have my own view of they should do this, they should do that, and putting my way of doing it onto what I think they should do. This has helped me. Hike Your Own Hike has kind of helped me, and particularly with looking at choices that loved ones make, like my kids, they're adults, young adults, that they're on their journey. This is their experience of life, and they're making important choices that lead down different paths. And my job is to not say, oh, they should do this, they should do that, but to embrace the choices of how they're tackling their journey and to be a part of that with them. And Hike Your Own Hike has been very, very helpful in helping me be more supportive to their choices.
Chapter 6, Mindfulness.
The Long Green Tunnel. This is what a lot of people call the AT, and it is true, you do spend a lot of time in the woods. Different than, say, the Pacific Crest Trail, where you spend good chunks of time with unimpeded vistas, where you can have a day of just incredible views. The AT is a little more stingy with its views. There are some incredible spots, but you do spend a lot of time in the woods, and once the leaves come out, that it is a long green tunnel. And some people refer to that as, you know, creates for a boring hike, or you know, you wait all day to get to some view. And what I started thinking was that you spend most of your time in that state, and in a way it's kind of like life. You're waiting for these milestones, but most of life is not this big event that you've been looking forward to. How to be more mindful of right now, that's where you're spending most of the time, and it's the only time you're going to be in that spot, and to appreciate where you're at. And one of the things I started doing with my hiking was I had started a mindfulness practice a couple years before I did the AT, and I started to apply it to hiking. And what I would do is try to be more aware on each sense. And so during the day, I would take 5 or 10 minutes at different points of the day and say, I'm just going to focus on sound. And as I would hike, I'd change my focus to that. And all of a sudden, when you would do that, you would start hearing birds that you were not hearing. And you would hear how two of them are calling back and forth. And you'd hear the wind rustling in the leaves, and that maybe a rumble of thunder in the distance. And there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. All of a sudden, I would be aware of it. It had been there, and I just wasn't present with it. Then I would switch to each sense, and I would go through smell, and I would go through etc. And it made rich experience because it put me right where I was. When I'd focus on what I was seeing, all of a sudden I would see the little spring flowers that were coming up, and I would start to focus on things. And I think we spend so much of our life not in the present, looking something I'm planning in the future, or I can't wait till I'm old enough to do this, and that kind of stuff. And bringing you back to right here, right now, and especially in a place that is filled with so much beauty. And in that long green tunnel is a massive amount of beauty, if you just take the time to look. That it's, you know, the mosses and the trees, the limbs, everything is, it's really very inspiring, and it's a matter of turning your focus to now. And I think in not just with the trail, but with life, it's seeing and appreciating the beauty that is there.
Chapter 7, Simplicity.
One of the things I found on hiking the AT is I enjoyed it more when my pack didn't weigh as much. Big surprise. And I started thinking about why is that. And yeah, you start out and you have a whole bunch of stuff that you want to take with you. And then you have the things in the pack that you need to take with you. And as you go on, you start getting rid of those wants, and you kind of end up with just the needs, because that's sort of the sweet spot, that it makes your hiking and journey more comfortable and pleasurable, and you have what you need, and you realize you don't need what you want. And I think the thing that I've taken off the trail is that simplicity of just getting down to, you don't need these other things, and they're not enhancing your life. And to live more simply, and to take it even further, that when I was on the trail, I started thinking about what do I value, and not just what's in my pack, but just what do I value. And what it came down to is I value what I hold most dear is those relationships that are the most meaningful to me, the people that you love, that to make sure that I'm putting my energy to those things. They're the things that matter to me, and put my energy there. And I think in the past, I spent a lot more energy worrying about things that were not that important, and kind of distinguishing between the two. It's just like the things that were in my pack that really weren't that important. There's a lot of things in my life that I used to worry about that really aren't that important. So my energy has been much more focused to a smaller group of things, and that's where I'm caring about. And just in terms of my physical things that I want in life in order to be happy, they're maybe a good pair of hiking shoes. But other than that, there's not too many things that are really very important. That simplicity of the trail, where what you're thinking about during a day is, where am I going to get my next water? What's my next snack? Where am I going to shelter? Much more basic than worrying about what your next car is going to be.
Chapter 8, Faith.
One of the things that I felt immediately when I started the trail was this sense that I almost had a guardian angel looking down on me. I don't know if that is just something in my mind, if it's my deceased father looking out over me. I'm not sure, but I certainly felt it. And I developed a faith that I had not had before, that this journey on the AT, I was going to be safe, and it was going to be valuable. It was going to give me some of the things that I was looking for out of it. And it did. And many times it would get reinforced. And you hear a thing on the trail, a lot of times they say the trail will provide. A lot of hikers use that. And I think what I got out of that was, if you're really thirsty, you're out of water, sometimes feeling a little desperate, and it seems like that's when you come up around a bend and there's a little spring, and it's like the trail gave you that. Or you're really hungry, you're out of food, and that seems to be when you get your trail magic, where somebody offers you some food. And so this idea of the trail will provide, what I really felt out of the trail was a little differently than that. And I kind of had a saying that I used to myself and I'd share with others was, I believe the trail always gives you what you need, but not what you want. And it's a big difference, and I'm going to tell a few stories to try to illustrate that. And the first one will be with a story about my own hike, that I was in Virginia, and for those of you who have hiked that section or hiked the whole trail, there's a really cool shelter, Chestnut Knob, and I got up to there. I'd hiked a long day, and was feeling really good, and I noticed my urine started to have blood in it. I've never had that before. It was very alarming. Got up in the morning and it hadn't changed, and I became very concerned that I might have something very serious. I needed to go get medical attention, and my mindset of the hike really changed, and I became very fearful just for my health and whether I would be able to continue with my hike if this persisted. And very upset, you know, it's a very troubling thing. I've never had that happen. As it turns out, I got into the next town about 13 miles or so, and they had a medical clinic, and I went in, and it was a urinary tract infection, and I got on a course of antibiotics, and all was good. My mindset when I saw the blood wasn't all as good. It was just the opposite. And so how does this relate to the trail gives you what you need, not what you want? Well, I didn't want that infection. That's for darn sure. But the way that I was hiking then, I was keeping up with a lot of young 20-year-old males that I was kind of hanging with a little bit. And I'm not a 21-year-old. I didn't need to be hiking the pace that they were. I wasn't hiking my own hike. I think the trail needed to get me more humble, and it did. I think that one of the beauties of me going into that clinic, and then I took a day, zero day, was I got some incredible trail magic from a couple in that area, that Randy and Teresa, that I would have never met had it not been for this incident, which turned out to be one of the highlights of my whole journey. So again, the trail gave me what I needed. I wanted to keep speeding along down the trail, but that's not what I needed at that moment. And the last thing was kind of a practical thing, was my hydration strategy was not good up to that point. I wasn't drinking enough, and I needed to respect my body more and make sure that I was taking care of it. And it gave me the resolve to be much better on hydration, which I did do for the vast majority of the rest of the trip. So at any rate, I think that's a good example to me of how something bad happens. Then I started to see how if I had faith, don't focus on the bad thing, but I have to take care of that, but there's a reason that I'm having this experience, and I need to stay positive to get to the other side of it. A couple other stories, these are from other hikers. I won't use this trail name of this person because it's kind of a personal thing that he shared, but this person had hiked that trail the year before me. He did not complete it, and he was trying it the year that I hiked as well, and I met him on his second attempt. He said he's about a 19 or 20 year old guy. He said that he had done a lot of bad things. He had done bad things to other people. He had stolen and lied and cheated. And he was using the trail. His reason for hiking was kind of personal redemption. He wanted to become a better person, somebody that he could be proud of, and he really wasn't proud of who he was. He was hiking along in the prior year, and he got up into the Shenandoah National Park, and he started doing some hitchhiking and skipping sections of it, which is, if you wanted to do that, it's an easy area to do it. And he skipped about 60-70 miles of the trail, and he continued on, and he got up to Vermont and was making good pace, and he said he just became overwhelmed with a feeling of that he had never felt before, which was really his conscience saying, "You cheated." Nobody knew he cheated. It was only him. And he finally said, "I can't continue. I have to go back to Virginia and do those sections before I can move on." He said, I don't feel right about this. Well, earlier in his life, he would have had no qualms about cheating, and especially if nobody knew. And so he went back to Virginia, and as it turned out, that's where his hike ended, and for run out of money and some other issues. And he felt like he had failed on that attempt, and he was out doing it, attempting for the second time. I look at it differently. I think the trail gave him exactly what he needed. He didn't want that. He wanted to finish the trail, but it gave him the reason that he went out on the trail in the first place. He had that personal epiphany in growth. And again, so I think that the trail gives you what you need. The last story I'll talk about related to this, and again, this is really this idea of this faith to me was probably the biggest takeaway I had from the whole trail. But I was about to finish. I was about 4 days away up in Maine, and you're in what's called the 100-mile wilderness. And I met a guy that was starting his southbound hike, and a tremendous hiker. I mean, he was already doing low 20-mile days right out of the start, which so he was in great shape. He was a guy from California, a real strong hiker, and a great attitude on the trail, and just a nice guy. We talked for maybe an hour, and one of the things that came out was he had planned this hike for a long time, for years, and he had his heart set on it, which like many of us do, but something had happened in the interim that he had fallen in love with a wonderful woman. They had just recently got married, and he still proceeded on his plan to do the trail, and he wasn't going to be able to see his new wife until he finished. She was a school teacher and was not going to be able to come out and visit. And at any rate, we had our conversation, and he, at the end of that day, he was going south and I went north. And I finished about 4 days later, and on the fifth day, I was going to take a bus from Millinocket, Maine, which is near a town near Mount Katahdin into a town called Bangor, where then I could take a bus to kind of head home to southern Maine. I'm waiting for the bus in Millinocket, and who shows up at the bus stop but this guy from California, and who has just started his hike. And I said, shocked to see him, what are you doing here? Are you okay? And he was fine physically, and he said it just sort of came to him that his priorities, that the time was not right to hike the AT. He was just feeling very strongly a draw to the AT, but that the timing wasn't right. He needed to put his focus on his new marriage. And again, I just thought, what a gift from the trail. The trail welcomes him, but it wasn't the right time. And so again, I really believe we all have an angel. I now do not believe that it is just why you're on the AT. That's where I felt it, and now I continue to feel it in the life after the AT. And where it has really helped me is just to be able to stay positive when tough things happen, to be able to say, I know, I have a faith that there's a good reason for this, and I will stay positive until that reveals itself.
Chapter 9, Openness.
I had mentioned earlier that lots of the people who hike the AT are at a time of transition in their life, and that was no different for me with the early retirement. And what's kind of cool is when you're in a time of transition, you're much more open to different ideas and change and possibilities. You know, it's a time where you're open to growth, you're open to healing, self-discovery. Just, it's a different mindset than when you're just cranking through life like maybe in your normal day-to-day. And, you know, you ask yourself when you're on the trail, I started to say sometimes, you know, really, what am I here for? Not just on the AT, but what am I in life for right now? What should I be working on? How can I be a better person? What should I be doing to improve? And that for me, it became this element of awakening, sort of a spirituality. For others, it's different thing. Everybody has something different that they're finding there. But I think the idea of being open to what you find and open to possibilities, and I'm trying to do that off the trail as well, to build on this sense of spirituality, but also just to build opening to new experiences, different people than you might have hung with before, different ways of treating your body with, you know, alternative medicines and different things. But in general, the idea is to take that thing where when I was on the trail, I was very open, to not allow it to close back down.
Chapter 10, Love the AT.
So I hope it's clear that I think that the trail is a very powerful healing and awakening force. And I want to close with sharing a few trail names that I think capture that element of it, that spiritual side, and how powerful the AT is. There's a person I met when I was doing my journey who, he was actually out just for a week or two, but he had hiked the trail about 15 years ago. His trail name was Missing Person. And I said, why do you have that name? And he said at the time he'd been working a job like 60 or 70 hours a week, and he quit in order to hike the trail. And at work, it was like there was this missing person. He'd be noticed because of that. And we talked more over the evening, and he said, well, that's true, but the real deeper reason why he had that trail name was his brother had passed away. And his brother had introduced him to backpacking. And as part of his coping with the grief of losing such a special person, he decided to hike the AT. And hence the name Missing Person. Most people's names, you see all kinds of things that capture maybe an element of their personality, or it's a funny thing and all that. But sometimes people have a name that hints to the greater power of the AT. And whether your name does or doesn't affect whether you have that experience. Another name, and I had not met this person, but I've heard about them. His name was Gutless. And it's hard to imagine you could have a personality of Gutless and complete the trail. However, this person was named Gutless because he was missing a large part of his intestine and had a colonoscopy bag there. A very famous hiker, Bill Irwin, went by the name He and His Dog, went by Orient Express, and Bill Irwin was blind, and he completed the trail. And the last one is a person I heard of from a couple years before I went, and this person was called Bear Witness. And I said, why did he have that name? And the reason was he was a stage 4 cancer survivor. So again, the power of the AT. I hope it's apparent that I love the Appalachian Trail. If you are thinking of hiking it or some sort of pilgrimage, I definitely encourage you to do it. And if you just like the AT, please become a member of the Appalachian Trail Conference and support their stewardship of the journey. And they do amazing work. It's all funded through, all the work is by volunteers on the trail. And your support is another form of trail magic.
Thank you for listening to this recording. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to pass along, I'd love to hear from you. Please email me at ttomczyk@maine.rr.com. This audio recording is copyright protected, 2016, Thomas Tomczak. Music provided by Josh Woodward, under a Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial license.